Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You're listening to the Superman Super Show, episode number 34, aka Luther's Undersea City. Hello, and welcome to the Superman Super Show. I'm a host. My name is Ed, and 1,000 miles over there to my left is another host, Mr. Stephen Orr. That's Stephen saying hi, by the way.
Yeah, he's going to grunt my hello.
Reminds me of, I just finished the second season of Primal. Was it you that I was talking
to? Yeah, I haven't watched
that?
It yet. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Jendi, I think that's how you pronounce it. Tartakovsky.
Yeah. I like his stuff, even though I never watched all of Samurai Jack. But
Well, that's okay.
He did that Clone Wars before the Clone Wars CGI, mm-hmm. They did the series of shorts by him that were really good. He was Dexter's Laboratory.
Yes, originally, or at least that's the first place I saw him. I don't know if that was his first, but yeah, that's what I remember. So this is the fourth episode. Those of you that are listening to the podcast, you might not be aware of this, but the fourth episode we're recording in one sitting. And so one more time, I ask Stephen, do you have a podcast recommendation?
I do. For those watching, this is a show that I just finished listening to three episodes yesterday, and it's called The Newsprint Commando, hosted by our very own Ed Moore. You can find that at comicbooknoise.com/TNC for The Newsprint Commando. And according to I think I got this off of Apple Podcasts. Join Ed as he talks about comics from the late 70s, 80s, and early 90s. And here's the key, not published by Marvel or DC. So the episodes I listened to recently were the first three issues of The Adventurers from 1986. You've also talked about like Badger and Nexus, among others.
Right.
Of everything you've talked about so far, Badger and Nexus are the only ones I'd ever heard of.
Oh, cool. Okay.
So I'm really kind of enjoying, I've never heard of The Adventurers, but it sounds fun. And the one thing I think of when I'm listening to these is if I was like I was in my 20s, where I did a lot of back issue diving, we could go in and go through the back issue bins, this would be the perfect podcast to follow and then go find that stuff, you know? Man, it's a lot of fun. It's, again, the key here, folks, is that it's not Marvel and DC books. And so you're probably going to hear some stuff that you've never heard of before. And it's a lot of fun. I'm really enjoying it.
Well, thank you. I remember back in the day when I saw ads for The Adventurers, it's two things. One thing is that it was the elevator pitch was Dungeons and Dragons meets the X-Men.
Yeah.
And I was a huge X-Men fan and I'm like, wait, D&D? And so that's what got me. But yeah, that's what The Adventurers are. This is the show Steven's talking about is the first volume. It ran somewhere in the mid 20s, I ended up talking about the first five issues.
Okay.
And there's a second volume of about the same 20 to 25 issues. And then I think there was a third volume of like 10 or 12 issues. For the most part, it's the same characters through all of those. But of course, as I spoke of, I think in the very first issue, one of the original party dies right off in the first issue, which if you've ever played D&D, you're lucky if you, as the player character, survive. That's all you're hoping for. Those were a lot of fun to read again. The first volume I read, if I ever talk about the second or third volume, it'll be the first time I've read those.
Oh, nice.
But yeah, those were a lot of fun. As we have been talking about on Twitter about recording ahead of time.
Yeah.
I already have three different books over the course of the number of shows that I want to release for next year, picked out that I want to talk about.
Okay.
And, some of those people might have heard of, we'll just have to wait and see, but yeah, actually here before too long, I'll start sitting down and recording those.
So as of the time we're recording this, which was November 15th, the latest episode was for Volume 1, Issue 3 of The Adventurers. Mm-hmm. So looking forward to when this episode releases on December 26th, where do you think we'll be?
I think probably we will have finished up the 5-issue run of that, and we'll be finishing up the first year of the show. So that's everything that I've pre-recorded. Okay. I don't have anything else yet. It's what I'm.
Can you tease us with some titles for 2023?
Sure.
See if I've heard of any of them.
I am looking at Samurai from Aircell Comics by Barry Blair. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at a book called Red Fox from Harrier Comics, which is a UK company. Samurai, I think, was a little bit earlier, like 83, 84. Red Fox was in the middle, 86, 87. And then my plan is to release two schedules. The Samurai and Red Fox, I'll alternate once a month. But I'm going to release a second show on, like, I don't know, the second Tuesday or the second Wednesday of every month, whatever, where I'm going to be focusing on the books published by Pacific. Among the books that Pacific had was the very first volume of Gru, which was about 15 issues.
Okay.
But also the very first book that they published was a Jack Kirby book.
Wow.
So, and the way I'm thinking about doing that is much like our fellow podcaster John Wilson did with All the Pouches. So I will record shows talking about all of the books published in a given month, and then I will drop all of those episodes at the same time, probably won't do anything that affects next year because their publishing schedule never got more than like just a couple books, I'll be able to squeeze into one episode. But if I continue, and at that rate, if I continue, it'll take me about 3 years to talk about all their books. The second and the third year, there's some months where they do like 8, 10, 12 books. So
yeah,
those will be fun to do. So Samurai from Aircell, Red Fox from Harrier, and the very first book from Pacific is Jack Kirby, Captain. Oh, I can't remember the title. Captain, nope. But the next book from them is a book called Star Slayer, which some folks may remember hearing about Star Slayer. It was based.
Sounds familiar.
It was based on an opera, on a sci-fi opera that was written over on the left coast back in the early 80s. And it was adapted into a comic book.
Yeah, that sounds familiar. I definitely have heard of Samurai. I was reading or trying to get my hands on Elf Lord.
Yes.
Which was Aircell. And I got a number of copies up in the attic somewhere, and they have a number of them available on Comixology.
Do they really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think volume 1 and volume 2 are all on Comixology. There's only like 5 or 6 issues in each volume, but So I knew about Samurai, and then what was it? Dragon Ring? Is that another one that they did at the time?
Yes, it is.
But I didn't really read any of those. They weren't fantasy comics about elves, so I didn't have any interest.
Yeah,
and that's true. But I'd never heard of this
Red Fox. I think probably a lot of people won't have heard of that one because it was a UK book. Yeah. So,
and I don't know that I've ever heard of. I know what GRU was, but I don't know that I've heard of a company called Pacific. So,
The Red Fox is a kind of a Red Sonja character.
Okay,
that's kind of what she is.
All right, fun stuff coming up.
So, thank you for the shout out, by the way.
Sure, I'm enjoying it. It's a fun show. If you guys enjoy listening to Ed talk about Superman here, jump over there and listen to that. Here's some maybe some stuff that you didn't know existed. And then if you are one that likes to frequent comic book stores and go through those back issue bins, Ed's giving you a list of books to look for.
Yeah, Piper Cody, I'm sorry that I can't remember the title of that Pacific Kirby Captain something. Let me see if I can get it up here with a couple keywords.
Captain Caveman?
No. Pacific Comics.
Tell you what, I would totally be down to writing a Captain Caveman comic book.
Would you now?
Oh, yeah. I liked me some Captain Caveman when I was a kid.
Bear with me a minute, guys. This is going to haunt me if I don't pull it out of my behind and give the title of the book.
Stinky.
Dinky. Here. Captain Victory and the Galactic Rangers.
Ooh, that's a long title.
Is that not a Kirby sounding name?
That sounds very 80s, though.
Early 80s is when Pacific was in, and they were only around for like 3 years. They were flash in the pan, but...
The comic book store that we shopped in the 80s and then into the 90s in downtown Lawrence, Kansas, called Quality Comics, they did a pretty good job of getting a lot of indie books. You know, being a college town, you know, there was some draw for that kind of stuff. But yeah, I've never heard a lot of those. So.
Something else about Star Slayer that I forgot, but Star Slayer contained the first appearance of the Rocketeer.
Oh, nice. So the Rocka Who? The Rocka Who? I'm the Rocketeer. The Rocka Who?
So there we go. Captain Victory and the Galactic Rangers. Okay. So are we bantered?
Banter complete.
All right. So today we're looking at Luther's Undersea City, which is the second story to appear in Superman number 4. This is written for us by Jerry Siegel, penciled by Joe Shuster, and inked by Paul Cassidy. Superman number 4 has a cover date that indicates spring 1940, but Mike's Amazing World kind of pins that down for us and guesstimates that had an on-sale date of February 15, 1940, which February.
Now
that's spring, isn't it?
Yeah, and this is one of those where, you know, we talked last time, or the last time we did a group of episodes, not in the last episode, but that on Mike's Amazing World of Comics, I started to notice that some of those books have it listed as approximate sale date, and some of them are listed as on sale date, and this was one that has on sale date. So I think that's Mike saying, this is when it hit the shelves or hit the stands, was February 15th.
Yeah. According to all the research.
Yeah. I don't know where he.
I don't know how they do that either. Man,
you know, there's a guy in, is it Georgia? One of the new senators in Georgia who's a comic book fan. And I started following him on Twitter. And he's tweeted about being at the Library of Congress and finding a bunch of comic books there.
I saw that.
Yeah.
I told my wife that, and I turned to Terry and I said, you know, I wonder if every comic book company in this country has to send a copy to the Library of Congress. Don't most books that are published have to send a copy to them?
I think so. And that's kind of weird because where do you fit all that after a while?
I don't know, but that's their problem. I just want to go and see that.
Into
that's,
underground stuff.
That's what I'm saying.
Piper Cody put in the chat that February 12th, 1940 was the debut of the radio serial.
Cool.
So
actually now would be the time to start listening as our reading matches up with when the radio serial started.
Radio.
I'm already behind reading the newspaper serial if I was going to do that. That started last year. Yeah. So, all right. So, the synopsis, this synopsis, rather, is courtesy of Mike's Amazing World of Comics as well. Superman investigates trouble with the nation's oil wells. He learns that Luther is behind the crisis and saves some of the wells from destruction. Later, as Clark Kent, he and Lois are kidnapped by two of Luther's thugs because they've caused Luther trouble in the past. Clark knocks Lois out and then causes the thugs to drive off a cliff. When Lois revives, they fly by plane to a glass-enclosed city, which is risen from the ocean. The plane is attacked by a pterodactyl, killing the pilot and injuring Lois. Superman lands on the island and fights off another beast, while the injured Lois is captured by Luther, who controls the city. With Lois' safety in jeopardy, Superman is forced to cooperate with Luther. He fights another beast while Lois is taken to be killed. Superman overcomes his opponent, rescues Lois, and destroys the city. Luther is apparently killed by his own creatures.
So sad.
So what did you think of that one, Stephen?
This was a fun one. Base of operations has risen a notch. And I think what's most amazing about this undersea city is he didn't build it. The city was already there.
He found it.
A sunken city, Pacifo or something, some weird name. And he,
Pacific.
Yeah, it was
something like
really
that.
Dumb name.
But it put you in mind of Pacific Ocean, but right, it exactly. wasn't spelled exactly the same.
And he spent time underwater, covering the city with glass so that it could, you could hang out there with the dinosaurs and breathe the air.
Probably
doesn't smell all that great. This issue really kind of brought home to me how, useless really Lois is in a lot of these stories, that her only purpose of being in this story was to provide, to be a hostage so that Luther could say, do what I say, or she's going to, because the first thing that happens to them, Superman Clark reaches over and gives her the old Vulcan nerve pinch. The second time he's done that now, knocks her unconscious. And she spends a majority of this book either unconscious or in a coma-like state.
Right.
Which.
Yeah. Her point, according to Mr. Siegel, is to be rescued. Yeah. That's what she is there for.
That's why she's there. Yep.
Yeah. So, and to me, there are certain things that are almost always written a certain way in comic books. The longer you read, the more that it just dawns on you that, and so you start to overlook things because it's, quote unquote, good or bad. Okay. I'm not judging it, but it is the way that it is. And it's always that way. And so it doesn't make, after a while, you get desensitized to it and you don't pay as much attention to it. The female in distress is a very long standing trope in comic books because the majority of the characters being written about are male. And so it is used as a motivation for the male. I just finished, DeRoss's biography of Gardner Fox. And according to her, he was, particularly for his time, maybe not in comparison to what you see now, but for his time. And for those of you that don't know Gardner Fox, he is, among other things, the reason I read it, he is the creator of Dr. Fate. So he is a much written DC Golden Age creator. He also is involved in The Flash, co-creator. I believe he's also creator or co-creator of Hawkman.
He's a big name.
And right there, we're starting to throw out
long
standing characters.
He's one of the big names.
So Yeah. And according to Miss or Mrs. DeRoss, he was very good because his thinking was this way also, in that women should stand on their own feet. That's why they exist, is to be a person that does things. They don't exist to be used as a reason for something else. And in thinking about, as I said in one of the earlier episodes, I've read all of Dr. Fate's appearances. And in retrospect, he did write females differently from, in this case, Lois.
Yeah.
And if you have read several Dr. Fate stories that had Dr. Fate's girlfriend, name escapes me, but you will see in comparing the two that, yeah, she doesn't run afoul as much. She is there, and she is there after he's done something and he comes back in much more of a normal situation, almost like a husband going to work and coming home from work.
Yep.
As opposed to a kidnapping in peril, which happens a couple times in the Dr. Fate story, but that's not mainly what happens. She lives a much more normal life than what we have seen from Lois.
Yeah.
And now reading the Superman stories, it is very more obvious to me that that is what Gardner Fox was doing with women in Dr. Fate than what Siegel is doing with women here for Superman. The Gardner Fox biography, I would highly recommend it. She did a very, very good job on the book. It's not just Gardner Fox's Inza. Yes, Piper, thank you. Or Inza among, like, over the course of the stories, her name fluctuated 3 or 4 times too. But Inza, I think, is what mainly stuck. The biography talks about Gardner Fox as a person, not just as his in his comic book aspect, because over the course of his writing career, he wrote also several hundred novels, several hundred novelettes, magazine articles. He wrote for more than just DC before and after writing for DC.
Yeah.
So he was a very written man, particularly for his day. Very, very good biography. I just finished it up this past weekend, actually. So a lot of fun.
I'll look into it. I've been wanting to read more books about comics, you know, comics history and whatnot. And the damsel in distress trope, you know, we're still getting that today.
Oh yeah.
They've just, you know, what writers do now is that they take the woman and they make her she's a strong character. She stands on her own and she's a fighter. And then, but the only reason you put her in the movie is so the bad guy could kill her and give the male hero his reason, you know, for coming out of retirement or, you know, shutting down the bad guys. Cause you know, your male hero always has to have flaws and they're always reluctant to, you know, it's too busy drinking and being an alcoholic.
They have to have a good reason.
And
to
sometimes the easy reason. And my God, for the longest time, I'd never noticed it. And, you know, took my wife to point stuff like that out to me. And it's like, once it's pointed out, it's sometimes it's just so screamingly obvious that.
Yeah. You just become desensitized to it because it is every book, not every physical book, but every title.
Yep.
It occurs at some point in every title because all of the heroes that we're reading are male.
They're males written by males. Yeah.
You know, now take Wonder Woman, for example. I know that Steve Trevor has been put in peril, but not as frequently and not in the same ways.
Yeah,
because it's a man. Even though the female is the protagonist, the foil male can't be done like that for whatever reason. I don't, you know, so.
And the dude that created Wonder Woman, you know, basically put that, her weakness was what, being tied up. So
yes,
they often had to, you know, whereas Superman would be presented with kryptonite.
Yeah, Wonder Woman. Her Golden Age stuff had some interesting quirks because of the personality of her creator.
Very little I know about that guy. It's like, wow.
It's different. Yeah. Again, I'm not going to judge or say right or wrong or whatever, but different.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. If people are writing a character like that today, it's not going to be a mainstream Marvel DC book that you're reading it in.
Yeah.
I'll put it that way. So take that for what you will. Okay. So back to our book here. So Superman is fighting off a missile attack. Once again, that seems to be very popular from Luther here, sending bombs and missiles at Superman. Only this time, as Superman is defeating this particular missile, Luther projects his face onto the missile rather than a tree like last issue. It's a missile this issue. And they talk back and forth. I think Luther was trying to distract Superman long enough for the missile to completely fall out of the sky.
Yeah.
But Superman was onto that. And he jumped off just before it hit the ground and exploded. Not that it would have hurt him anyways, but and that was to try to derail him from getting to the oil wells.
Yeah.
That's where Superman is on the way to, which automatically tells you that Luther must have something to do with what's going on there, since he's trying to waylay Superman.
The oil derricks, which they use that term quite often here at the beginning of this story, which I really enjoyed, because even though it's not spelled the same way, I have a friend named Derek. And so the derricks that were being destroyed.
Would that be Mr. Coward, or would that be someone else?
No, but one of my old bandmates, his name is Derek.
Okay. Yes, I mentioned Derek Coward. For those of you that do not know, Mr. Coward is in no small way responsible for comic book podcasting. Yeah. So look him up if you have any interest in history of comic book podcasting.
Yep.
So Superman gets here. He's waylaid again by an earthquake, but he has a little helpy here for some of the oil derricks for the earthquake. Now, Clark got sent by his editor to look at the oil wells. Lois shows up out of nowhere. She boards an airplane to go out there. I don't know why. Yeah. Presumably because the editor told her to go out too. Yeah. But we know he didn't tell her at the same time that he told Clark, because we saw that.
Yeah.
We didn't see anything having to do with Lois other than essentially she shows up in Oklahoma and Clark's like, oh, he sent you too. Okay, well, let's go.
Yeah, In fact, Clark is such a go-getter that I love his response when his editor tells him that he's sending him to Oklahoma, you know, cover the story. And Clark says, just try and stop me.
There's more quippy.
Yeah.
Not necessarily for the same reason, but still the same personality.
Sounds like a suck up to me.
Oh, harsh. So Clark and Lois go to the Oklahoma Bulletin. Is the name of the paper here, to find out what's going on. But they find out while they're there that California is falling into the ocean at the same time that they're in Oklahoma. They're told that the ocean has risen 2 feet. So I guess it's not California falling in. It's the ocean coming up to over.
And it's continuing to rise.
So Clark grabs Lois and they're going to head out there, but they're waylaid by a couple of ne'er-do-wells courtesy of Luther, waiting for him. Knew that they were going to come out because I guess, you know, Luther knew they were there. So Luther did something to the West Coast because he knew they would leave, and in leaving, they would be exposed. So he sent some henchmen to get them. Yeah, that's the logic here is getting kind of specious to me. It's like, okay.
Now Luther's a planner.
If you wanted Clark and Lois, just go grab them. You know, don't destroy California just to get them. That's a bit overkill. You know, we know you're a smart guy, but come on. So Clark and Lois now are in the clutches of the ne'er-do-well. And this is where, as they're driving, before he does anything, Clark gives the Vulcan nerve pinch to Lois.
To save her life.
As you indicated, for the second time now. Knocks her out. He messes with the car. while he's doing this, one of the ne'er-do-wells has a pistol and shoots him in the face.
Yeah.
I think that's the first time we've seen that. But point blank, shoots him in the face.
The glasses even survive.
So Clark is, he's getting tougher and tougher all the time now. Yeah. You know, used to be he would stand out there and it would be a rifle.
Yep.
Now he's taking pistol shots to the face.
Inches from his face. My teachers always tell me I was thick schooled.
Yeah. Quip.
Yep.
Quip. So he overcomes the two thugs, and in the process, the car loses control, goes off the cliff. Clark, do you want to mention that, Steve?
Oh, the comment.
What Piper said.
Piper Cody said, I wonder if this influenced Superman the movie. We need dinosaurs in a future movie. And you know, when you ask me what I thought about this issue, all I got to say is Superman fights dinosaurs. I'm done. That's all I need. I'm happy.
You're out? Okay.
That's right. It's like, I'm sorry. Superman's fighting dinosaurs. Where do I sign up?
Okay. Yep. Yeah, I'll watch it. So the car careens off the mountain here, killing the guys. Apparently, here's another scene where there's no other outcome but the people dying.
Yeah, either the car going off the cliff kills them, or when he slammed their two heads together, that could have killed them.
That's true. He could have pulped their brains by the Laurel and Hardy thing there.
Doug's right. Dinosaurs make every story better.
Well, yeah, but I think gorillas make it a little bit better.
So, what about gorillas riding dinosaurs?
And dinosaurs? Okay, that's a done deal there. Right. Yeah, that's writes itself. Yeah. I mean, that's a yes, you know, it does. That's the one there. Throw in some fancy words like kaiju and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, when Peter Jackson did King Kong. I remember going out to eat with Karen and I think her family. And that night we were either going home to see King Kong or we were going to the theater to see King Kong. I don't remember which. But they had asked, what are you guys doing tonight? And so we're going to go see the new King Kong. And I remember one of her brothers saying something to the effect of, man, I heard that movie is just really long and boring and it's a big slog. And I said, does he fight a T-Rex in that movie? And he's like, yeah, he does. Does he fight two T-Rexes in that movie? And he's like, yeah. Does he fight three T-Rexes in that movie? And he's like, yeah, that's all I need to know.
That's, you know, and have you seen the original King Kong?
I've seen clips of it. Yes.
Black and white. Yeah. He fights a dinosaur in that.
Yes, he does.
So they have always put King Kong the gorilla against dinosaurs. Yep. It's, you know, you got to if you want to have a legit King That's Kong right. movie. So Clark rescues Lois here, but now she's unconscious, so she doesn't know all of the super feats he's doing to rescue her. When she does come to, she just comes to as him being Clark. Yeah. And he just feeds her some bull story about, you know, what's going on. So she doesn't know any better.
Yeah, she's a dumb lady. She's a dumb woman. She didn't need to know what's going on.
Gullible, I think. She's gullible.
Yeah.
You know, we have to be kind. So Clark finds a pilot to fly them out to the glass. What does it say here? Glass enclosed city of ancient weird design. That's the narration description here.
I did make a note on this. I actually looked this up because Clark asks the pilot if they will take him somewhere. And the guy says, I'll take you for $1,000. And Clark's like, oh, that's a deal. I looked it up. And according to, I'll just say, the internet.
How much was $1,000?
$1,000 then would be about $20,000 today. Some of the results said 19,000, some said 21,000. Right. So about $20,000. Clark was just like reaching into his wallet. Here's $20,000, basically.
Rolling in money as a newspaper reporter.
Well, I wonder if he still has that millions, you know, because way back.
Oh, that's right. You know, yeah.
He got all them millions of dollars.
We never saw him turn that in. So
I know he tried to use some of it in that one story to help out somebody for some reason, the rich guy who was so bored because he had all this money and couldn't figure out how to spend it and stuff. But yeah, he may still have all that money.
Dude, good point. Okay. So as they get near to the city, this is where they run into the stray pterodactyl, which apparently suddenly up from the prehistoric city. So the here's an interesting thing. The city is it's just a city. It's not an island and then there's a city, but it's just a city.
Yep.
And just the city is encased in glass. And out of that is the pterodactyl.
Yeah.
Probably more than one if we really got down to it, but
and it's not like even a glass dome. It's like the glass is almost form fitting to the buildings. That's that is a that it's one thing to build a glass dome around a city, but to actually shape the glass at that's some dedication.
Form fitting.
Yeah.
It's form fitting. The pterodactyl, of course, is every bit as big as the plane. So it attacks the plane and does a number on it, killing the pilot and knocking Lois unconscious. Oh, so for the second time this story, Clark does Superman stuff as Clark with Lois being unconscious and not being able to see or find out that there's any connection there between the two.
We get two images
she never makes the connection
in this story
of
Clark leaping. We get two images in this story of Clark leaping from an exploding vehicle carrying an unconscious Lois. That happens twice in this story.
Right. In the same story. So it's like, Jerry, are you running out of things here that you're having to, you know, repeating is one thing, but repeating in the same story, it's like, come on, man, it's Superman. Let him fly.
But no, I know, right? It's like, come on.
Yeah. He can't even fly, but okay. So, so with Lois in tow, he takes out the pterodactyl, so it'll quit bugging him, and then plummets essentially, right? The rest of the way down to the ground, but not hurting Lois. Yeah. He sets her over there. He goes over here and changes to Superman's outfit now, right? He takes off the Clark suit and comes back over here to where Lois is waking up as Superman. I don't believe she doesn't ask about Clark because she's in some kind of altered state.
Yeah, she's in.
So she doesn't even realize what's going on. She can move around.
So the shock must have put her in a coma.
It's a very interesting coma because she's sitting up and moving around and everything like that.
An automaton, basically.
Yes. Superman saves her from a giant rat, which I can only presume came out of the glass encased city.
Yeah.
Right. So that's because now
grabs it by the leg, flings it around
by the leg. Yeah. It doesn't rip the leg out by doing that. The rat stays whole. And so all of this is occurring though on an island now. So not just a city has risen up out of the ocean, but the city is on an island, and the island has nice vegetation and just like any other above water island, like, you know, like the Hawaiian Islands.
Yep.
So the island has not been under the water, but the city attached to the island has been under the water. You know, Luther doing some extreme science with that stuff. I don't know. So, yeah, he dispatches, like Steven said, the giant rat by flinging it around by its back leg. And no, it didn't tear it off. It just and threw it out into the ocean. When he turns around, Lois is gone because she's been grabbed by a couple henchmen and carted over to a plane that is flying to the city when the city is easily within visual distance. Yeah. I mean, they could have easily walked to the city.
Yeah.
So another cool design for the plane. I like the prop on the front and the back. That's kind of cool. As he's flying, Luther just talks to Superman this time. He doesn't do the casting his image on a cloud or anything. He just did voice projection, telepathy, who knows what it is.
His God voice.
Yeah, yeah. So they land. The plane lands. Superman. Caesar. Before he can go and rescue her from the two thugs here, Luther is there. And here in panel 68, Luther is looking pretty rough.
Right?
He's looking almost skeletal or something. Very withered and drawn. And
they're drawing his hair very disheveled. It's just like this rat's nest on top of his head almost.
Yeah. So once again, Luthor wants to test Superman against a giant creature that, I'm kind of getting ahead of myself here. Well, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, he tells Superman that he only wants to revive Lois, and he tells his henchmen to take her to the Green Laboratory, which apparently is code to mean killer.
Killer, right? Because that's what they try to do.
And I wonder, they don't make it clear, but I almost wonder if Luthor really did want to help her, and that the thugs just misunderstood. He's like, I think he meant he wanted us to kill her because he said the Green Laboratory, and that means to kill her. I don't know. I just thought that was kind of funny that it was actually, they were just mistaken.
Yeah, probably not though with Luthor. I guess not. It's possible because we're not told.
Right, we're so, not. Yeah. So I just, I in my mind, that's a little side story that.
The Navy, the official peoples finally noticed that there's a big floating city out here covered in glass. Yeah. There's a word for that in cooking, covered in glass.
Glazed.
Okay. And so they get together and one military talks to another military who talks to another who sends investigative planes out. But they say, verify the report. If the situation warrants it, use lethal gas. Yeah,
just leaving the decision up to them.
American Flyers is who these men are that have now been given the 00 designation, if you will.
You have a license to kill.
Superman gets into a kind of a combat arena. Well, not kind of. It says an open arena. And goes up against a kind of Tyrannosaur that, I don't know what the flip that is. He's just huffing and puffing or something. Or it could be that he's breathing fire.
I don't know. It almost looks like I can almost hear that dinosaur going, put him up, you know, because it looks like he's got his dukes up and he's ready to do some fisticuffs with Superman.
Kind of a humorous panel there for 82. But then for 83 and 84, where Superman is beating him, he looks a little bit more serious about it. But Superman defeats that dinosaur, that creature, monster, I guess is what they called him. Luthor gives the order to have Superman and Lois killed because now, did we miss? Yeah, I didn't mention, but yeah, Steven mentioned the take her to the green room and everything. Yeah. That failed because Superman heard them talking about it and he breaks through the wall and rescues her. So she is safe by the time he goes to the arena. Actually, she's down in the arena with him. We don't see her really get in the way, but she's down there with
him. She's still an automaton at this point.
And she is still in need of rescue.
Very much so.
Luthor gives the kill order since his monster didn't do the job. But by this time, the American planes have arrived, and they are indeed dropping lethal gas.
And do you see what it says, what the guards before the guards can use their green rays?
Green ray. Yeah, see that? What, green? Mm-hmm. It's all green. Mm-hmm. What? You can't tell me there's no connection between this and the fact that later on that kryptonite is green. Yeah. It's just, This everything that Luthor has done has been colored green.
And I mean,
green gas, green rays, the green room, the green liquid they were going to kill Lois in.
Stan Lee has always said that, like, the colors green and purple were villain colors. It's like, well, that's why all the villains wore green and purple. The only hero that wore green and purple would be the Hulk, because he was green with purple pants. But that's because he was kind of an anti-hero. But all the heroes were like red, white, blue, and all the villains, purple and green.
Now, that's interesting, because in literature class in college, green indicated something else in literature.
Yeah.
Green was the natural. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is kind of opposite of being evil and whatever. So, interesting convention there that got flipped between types of literature. Yeah. Media? Yeah, I guess types of media maybe would be better. Superman scoops up Lois. The planes damage the enclosed city enough that it's a distraction that allows Superman to get out. He goes through the glass covering. So let's see. First of all, for some reason, Luther gets down to being in the arena with the monster.
Yeah, I don't. That makes note that it's really hard to follow just those two panels. It's like, is Luther down in the? Because it looks to me like Superman jumped up. Yeah, to where Luther was, but for some reason the monsters are up there too. And then Luther tells the monsters to get Superman, and instead they attack him.
Right. So to get away from everything, Luther tries to lower the city back into the ocean, and so he encloses it back. So apparently it opened up when it rose, even though every picture of it had the glass case.
Yeah.
The city was always enclosed, but apparently in the air it had to be opened up, because now that he's trying to pull it back down into the ocean, he has closed the glass case to try to escape. Superman escapes with Lois, busting through the glass, allowing the ocean now to run into the city as it's submerging itself. Further, I'm sure, helping the city submerge even faster than what Luther had originally planned. Superman swims with Lois back to the mainland. She's okay. He kind of gives her another poo-poo story about what's been going on while she's been out of it, because from the time that the pterodactyl attacked the airplane, Lois has no memory of what happened from that point to now. So she was completely out of it. She woke up. Did they do anything? She just woke up on her own.
Yeah, he's able to
take her to
the shore, find a change of clothes, and get her to a doctor. Mm-hmm.
Yep, not her. She's in the same rags she's been wearing the whole time, but he has gone in and out of suits and whatever. Yeah. So he catches her up. We see, which is something in the last, all of these stories that we've talked about tonight have these paper shots of headlines and sub-headlines and everything like that. So that's a new thing that they're doing, kind of to sum up what has happened in the story.
Yeah, and to kind of show that not only is Superman doing his job, Clark Kent's also doing his job in writing articles about what happened.
Right. Way to go from the editor. Thank you much here from Superman. End of story. And in this issue, we have an image of the Sandman advertising Adventure Comics. Last issue, it was an image of the Spectre advertising.
They're kind of going back and forth.
More fun?
I don't remember.
Yeah, I don't remember what book the Spectre was from. I'm too.
We learn that the reason why the oceans were the Pacific Ocean was rising and covering California, I guess, was due to the city coming out of the ocean, and he had taken over all these oil fields, because then he was using the oil to power the city.
They kind of said that, but they didn't really explain why the finding of the city and what trying to raise it caused
it's like comic a book science. And in fact, the panel with the newspaper, one of the little headlines you see is scientists baffled. You know, there's more there, but it's like, I think we all are kind of baffled about how this happened. So we're in good company. Even the scientists don't know how this worked.
It's too big for us. You know, Luther had it all figured out, but us simpletons, us plebeians, we have no chance of understanding
it. It's too big for our minds to comprehend.
So there are the first three, arguably four, appearances of who we will know to be Lex Luthor.
Lex Luthor is still around today, still Superman's the Superman villain.
Oh, yeah. I would think definitely. Although you're talking on another one of your shows about a pretty nasty villain. I don't think Lex ever managed to kill Superman, although that's kind of a softly used word. But
we talked about how here at this point, Superman's two big villains are all They're super, super smart. So brain over brawn. And that's why they, from what Dan Juergens has said, why they chose Doomsday. You know, Doomsday wasn't originally created to just be something that came in to kill Superman. They had been toying with an idea of bringing in a villain. All of his villains, ultimately, at that point, most of his villains were villains that took down Superman using their brains, except for like the Parasite. But otherwise, they weren't like super right. strong guys like him. So they wanted to bring a character in that could, you know, go toe to toe with Superman physically. So they'd already kind of come up with his design, and Juergens had been doodling him and stuff. And so then when they came up with the death idea, it was like, well, here we got this guy right here. Choose him.
Cool. Cool. And we're talking about, since you spoke of one of my shows, we're talking about another show that Steven is doing, Just Another Fanboy Presents, where he is talking about the storyline, Death of Superman, pretty much as I was speaking about doing the Pacific Comics coverage. He is talking about the books as they release or were released 30 years ago for our weeks as we are moving through it.
Yep.
You've dropped 5 episodes so far?
Yes. As of today, November 15th, 5 episodes. Episode 6 comes out on Thursday the 17th, which...
And that will be... He will be talking about those books that released in the Death of Superman storyline this week, 30 years ago. Yep. And moving forward, that will be what he is happening. Yep. And if there was a week, which there always are weeks where elements of the storyline, there are no books that fit into that, he has plans to fill that slot with other aspects of the story that he is talking about. Ultimately, now are you stopping with the end of Death of, or are you going into?
I'm going through the whole thing, Death and Return of Superman. Okay. Yeah, it's almost a full year of stories. With there are 12 weeks. I think I counted throughout it that there weren't any books released during those weeks, and some of those weeks I may just take off. The first break is coming up. I think it's week 7, maybe. I think it's the week after Superman dies, or very close to it. But I'm going to go ahead and try to put an episode out that week. I'm going to talk about the recently released 30th anniversary special that they put out.
I was wondering if you'd read that. I don't think you had said anything about having read that.
I haven't read it yet. I've got it, but I haven't read it yet. But it looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. A lot of the art teams are coming back. So you got like Dan Juergens with Breeding on one of the stories. It's like 4 stories in one issue. And I know that Tom Grummet and who's the other guy? John Bogdanov, who did the Man of Steel stuff. Because then, you know, once he dies and they do the whole... The 4 Supermen that come back, you know, each one of those 4 titles kind of becomes their own thing. Okay. Superboy, Steel, the visored Superman, and the cyborg Superman.
Okay. So there you go, guys. There's more Superman talk if you want to hear Steven talk about another aspect of Superman. That one, 30 years ago would be?
92.
90, which would be 50 years after what we're talking about. So different time frames of Superman represented just from this one podcaster, Mr. Stephen Orr.
Hyper Cody says he's enjoying Just Another Fanboy Presents.
Good. Well, cool beats.
I'm having a really good time making the show. You know, it's like Just Another Fanboy. I bounce all over the place. And this is the point of this is one storyline until it's done. And then... We'll do something else later.
All right. So anything else you want to say about Superman 4?
I don't think so. No, I don't. No, I didn't make any other notes. I'm good.
All righty. And for those of you that can see, this is Kitsune here, who's decided to fill my space with
That's
me.
The cat that I usually see.
Yes. Yeah. 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 We have another one, but she doesn't typically come up and get in my face like this one does. Alrighty, guys. We do want to thank everybody for listening tonight. to this episode of the Superman Super Show. If you want to drop us a line, ask us a question, or maybe just give us some feedback in general, you can send an email to thesupermansupershow@gmail.com. You can also find us on Twitter under the handle @SoupsSuperShow, or come join the fun over on the forum at forum.justanotherfanboy.com. All the links for all these things will be in the show notes, so you can catch up with it there. Till next week, I'm Ed. That is Steven, and this was the Superman Super Show. Ciao.
Bye.
Superman is a copyrighted feature appearing in Action Comics magazine.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.